Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Not shocking that the Bucks lost. Shocking that they lost in such an undisciplined way and in such a ridiculous fashion, with Tom Brady forgetting the down and distance on the final play of the game and thinking he had one more play on the field. I mean, just utterly mind-blowing. I know 2020 has had a lot of crazy things happen in it, but I never would have anticipated that one of those things would be Tom Brady forgetting the down and distance on a two-minute drive against Nick Foles and the Chicago Bears, when all he needed to do was put his team into field goal range and they would have had a solid chance to win this football game. And I'm not just saying that because I had the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on the money line as a part of a money line parlay for a bunch of different bets. I felt very good about the Bucs winning this game, and even having watched the whole thing, I don't know how they found a way to lose. I feel like they made so many mistakes and so many errors and left so many different plays on the field that this was as much of a Bucs loss as it was a Bears win. I think they will go back and watch all this film and say, man, how in the world did we find a way to lose this game? And Nick Foles, I mean, it seems like he just finds a way to get wins. And the last time we saw him against Tom Brady, he was a lot better than he was last night. But in both cases, Nick Foles can say he emerged the victor against Tom Brady, and there's not a lot of people who can say that. All right, we are breaking down all the college football and the NFL games all throughout Outkick today. Excited to do so. Can't wait to watch all the games and see all the insanity on Saturday and Sunday. So let's dive right into all of these games. I'm going to be kicking back, watching an awful lot of college football and the NFL, as I do every single weekend. I am a football junkie. Dub is also a football junkie. So what we try to do at the start of the second hour of the program on Friday is give you our viewing guide, right? We each are going to pick a game and say, like, hey, this is my number one draft pick for the weekend, the game that I absolutely, positively cannot miss in both college football and the NFL, all right? And I will start it off this week. I let you start it off last week because you were excited to watch Auburn play against Georgia. And by the way, that was an unmitigated disaster for you because Auburn lost their 13th game against Georgia in the last 16. And so this is just a mess in general. So that was a, do you want to apologize to America for telling them to watch the Auburn Georgia game?
Yeah, I do. And I'm also, I just want to say, I hope the same thing doesn't happen to your beloved Volunteers this weekend, because we may be cursing our own teams by doing this. So if that happens again, if Tennessee can't score a touchdown this week, we may have to just cross off Tennessee and Auburn for the rest of eternity on these game draft picks.
Or not go draft them when they're going to Athens, because that's what's going on. Georgia back at home for my number one draft pick. I told you yesterday this was my blood bank guarantee, my favorite gambling pick. I love Tennessee to cover here. I think it's going to be competitive. I think it's going to be a fascinating battle. Let me break down why I think Tennessee-Georgia is going to be the best game of the weekend in college football, in my opinion, right? So Tennessee has a really good offensive line. They now have what I would call the hay in the barn starting to stack up with Jeremy Pruitt, right? The reason why Phil Fulmer hired Jeremy Pruitt is he saw in Jeremy Pruitt a coach like him, a guy who believes that games are won on the line of scrimmage, that you got to have the horses on the offensive and defensive lines of scrimmage in order to win. And Tennessee's not there yet like they were back in the late 90s and the early 2000s when Phil Fulmer really had Tennessee rolling. They were winning championships. They were contending top 10 perennial team. But they're getting closer. And I believe with two good running backs in Ty Chandler and in Eric Gray, that Tennessee is going to be able to make plays in the running game. The offensive line is going to be able to lean on Georgia's defensive front, which is really, really good. Points are going to be at a premium in this game. And ultimately, it's going to come down to whose quarterback makes a play late to win this game. So I think it's going to be close. And I have no idea whether there's any reason to have confidence whatsoever in Jarrett Guarantano, the quarterback for Tennessee, who is a fifth-year senior and should be really, by this point, consistent, but has not yet proven that he can be consistent as a quarterback. What I've said earlier about the challenge of a guy like Guarantano is he can have his A-level game, but he can still have an F-level game. And when you get to be a fifth-year quarterback, that's way too much variety in terms of your overall performance. So what kind of road warrior can he be against Georgia? And can Tennessee make Stetson Bennett beat them, right? Georgia is elite on the defensive side of the ball. They have a lot of talent across the board. Maybe, arguably, if you just look at recruiting class rankings, Georgia is almost the most talented team in college football right now. Ohio State, Bama, Georgia, I would say those are the three most talented teams in college football right now. But Georgia isn't elite at the quarterback position. And so, after all of the time that they have that they've had to develop, they now are starting a former walk-on who's a little bit undersized but has looked decent for them at the quarterback position in Stetson Bennett. I don't know what he's going to be capable of in this game, but I think it's going to come down to fourth quarter. He's going to have to make a play, or Jarrett Guarantano is going to have to make a play. I like Tennessee to cover this game. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Going to be a physical, old-school Southeastern Conference battle without a lot of points posted by either team. So I like Tennessee as the best draft pick here for college football. What college football game would you draft up?
I'm going to head on over to the ACC and the big marquee matchup between Miami and Clemson. Now, Miami, they're kind of like the sexy new toy this year in college football. They got a new quarterback transfer, Derek King, coming over from Houston. And Rhett Lashley, a former Gus Malzahn protege, if you will, is calling plays for Miami. And this offense has been absolutely rolling so far this year. They're averaging 267 pass yards per game, and they're coupling that with 232 yards a game on the ground. So they've really got a balanced attack. Derek King, if you haven't watched him, this kid is electric. I mean, he is absolutely fantastic. He's an incredible athlete, running the ball and passing the ball. Clemson, we all know about Clemson, and they kind of remind me, honestly, we talked about the Kansas City Chiefs earlier this week about how they kind of play up or down to their competition. Clemson kind of gives me that same vibe because last week they played Virginia. They won, you know, by a decent margin, 41-23, but if they were really up for that game, I feel like they should have won that game by 30 points plus. But now they get their first real test of the season, and, you know, they're only going to get a couple of these real tests all year. Being in the ACC, they've got Miami on Saturday, and then they got Notre Dame later on in the season. So is Clemson, the big question for me is Clemson going to really show up and show out in this game? The spread on this game is around 2 touchdowns.
Yep, similar to the Georgia-Tennessee game.
Absolutely, and they definitely have not played a team with the talent that Miami has, and they won't for a while, like I just mentioned. Will Clemson be able to get up and put it on this Miami team, or is Miami really a serious contender for the ACC title? Because this is a game, if Miami wins this game, I mean, they've got to almost be the favorite to win the ACC, at least get to the championship game and potentially represent the conference in the playoff. I have my doubts. I still think Clemson probably wins this game at home. But Derek King, like I mentioned, is a fantastic athlete, and he's one of those guys that can almost single-handedly win a team a game with his ability to run the ball and escape pressure, which I'm sure he'll be feeling from the Clemson front seven.
All right, so there are college football games of the week picks. I'll let you go first in the NFL. What's your must-watch NFL game this weekend, Dub?
This sounds odd to say, but this game involves the Cleveland Browns. The Browns are 3-1, and they're taking on the Indianapolis Colts, who laid a dud in week one against the Jacksonville Jaguars, which, looking back on it, seems impossible based on the way they've been playing in recent weeks. The Colts statistically have the best defense in the league, take it on the Browns, who are absolutely running the ball down people's throats. They're not even letting Baker Mayfield ruin things for them. So I think it's an interesting matchup from that perspective. Can the Browns keep the offensive role going on the ground, sprinkling in through the air? And how about the play call last week against Dallas? They were running reverses left and right, Jarvis Landry throwing bombs to Odell Beckham Jr. I'm curious to see if that sort of style continues against this Colts defense, because they might need it to get some yards against Indianapolis. But yeah, that's my game of the week in the NFL, Colts at Browns.
I agree with you. I mean, I think this is going to be, I never would have believed Colts-Browns would be a game that I'm like, oh man, I really want to watch this. I have no idea what's going to happen. It's also early tease for the final hour of the show and the final segment of the show this week. We are going to be giving you a pick, gambling pick in that game. And also in the game that I am drafting as my pick right now, which is the Battle of Pennsylvania. I am fascinated to see how the Eagles will continue, still rife with injury, coming off of a huge road win against the San Francisco 49ers that has them in first place in the woeful NFC East. The Eagles are 1-2-1, and the Steelers are 3-0. They got an early bye week because they were supposed to play against the Titans, weren't able to play there. And so now the Steelers at home get the Eagles coming to play against them. And I just think this is going to be a really, really interesting battle, right? Because Carson Wentz was atrocious in the first 3 weeks of the season. He started to show a little bit of progression in week four. Can he continue it? And what do we know exactly about this Steelers team so far? We know that the Eagles have been tough to watch if you are an Eagles fan. But the Steelers, when you actually break down, I know they're undefeated, but when you actually break down the teams that they have beaten, they haven't really beaten any teams that are very good. The Giants haven't won a single game, all right? Steelers beat them. The Broncos have won one game, and it was against the Jets. Steelers beat them. And the Texans have not won a game yet either. So if you look at this Steelers team and say, okay, they're 3-0, but the teams that they have beaten, and live math is always a challenge here, but I believe I am correct that the teams the Steelers have beaten are a combined 1-11 on the season. Only one victory, and that was the Broncos over the Jets, who are another 0-4 team. So the Steelers really haven't been tested at all. I think the Eagles is a step up in class. I think the Battle of Pennsylvania should be an interesting game to watch, and that is why I am drafting that one as my top NFL draft pick. All right, so there is our viewer guide for college football and the NFL, the two games that Dub and I think are the best in college and the two games that we think are the best in the NFL. Let me tell you this. As we get ready to go to break here, we are going to be joined by Ryan Glasspiegel, who is one of the writers for OutKick, and he had a pretty big story that he broke on Wednesday it was. He broke the story late Wednesday afternoon that ESPN is going to be laying off hundreds of employees in the near future. And that is a really fascinating and unfortunate story. I never want anybody to lose their job, but particularly in this COVID era when so many different people have been losing their jobs. But this is emblematic of a larger issue that ESPN is facing in their business, that every sports network is facing. Which is the overall ratings have collapsed for the NBA Finals. They've lost hundreds of millions of dollars off what they expected to make from those games based on very limited audiences. And as a result, ESPN has wildly, I believe, overpaid for very many different sports packages on television, and they haven't been able to make the money that they anticipated. And as a result, there's a great deal, frankly, of nervousness inside of ESPN and inside of Disney about the direction of this company. And so we're going to talk about that with Ryan Glasspiegel. I think you guys will enjoy it, and it should be an interesting examination of what is going on in the world of sports, particularly in business, but at ESPN in particular. And by the way, ESPN going super woke, that hasn't helped things either. Going all in on embracing left-wing politics instead of covering sports has also hurt them in a big way. It's helped us. Our audience is growing. Theirs is falling. We'll talk about that with Ryan Glasspiegel next. This is OutKick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
This is OutKick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We bring in now Ryan Glasspiegel. Ryan is a writer at OutKick. He is at Sports Report. He's been on the show several times before. And I want to dive into both of these stories with him. But I want to start with a story that you put up on OutKick on Wednesday afternoon that ESPN was in line to be firing hundreds of employees as its business continues to face challenges. What can you tell us about that story and why is it happening?
Okay, thank you for having me on, Clay. And yeah, so the headline of the story is that ESPN is bracing for major cost cuts. And I think you and I have worked in this industry long enough that cost cuts almost always mean layoffs. And so we've heard different numbers of how many people. It's going to be at least several hundred. You've heard as many as 700. Michael McCarthy of Front Office Sports did a follow-up story after we published in which he said it's going to be 300 to 700. And I guess the reason that there could be a variable is that as Fox Sports did earlier this year as well, as you know, ESPN asked some of their top talents and top executives to take pay cuts so that they could spare some people's jobs. And I think that it's conceivable that there could be like another round of requests for that. And then maybe that could impact the number of layoffs that there potentially are. And then as far as other cost cuts go, I think that we've seen during the pandemic that they've figured out leaner ways to run production. And so that might mean baseball announcers not being there. And if you just think about like how much ESPN has to pay for travel for announcers for the volume of games that they do. Look, they're going to send announcers to every Monday night football game. They're going to send announcers to every SEC football game. But then you start going down the inventory of games that they air and how many people watch them. And it's like, okay, Tennessee, Florida basketball on a Tuesday night, how many people do they need on site and how much money can they spend? And you go on, and there are other cost cuts they can do in production.
This is a big issue that's going to be hitting a lot of different companies in general. If you were, you know, 22 years old or 21 years old and you were listening to this right now and you were working in college and you wanted to get a job in sports, what would you tell a 20 or 21 or 22 year old person about the sports industry in general and where they should be looking?
You know, this is like a really, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this word right, but like a macabre way to look at it. But in a very like bizarre way, this kind of does present opportunities for 21 to 22 year olds, because when these companies do lay off people, it's usually people in their 50s, 60s, maybe 40s, and then they have to replenish the work somehow. And so it, like ESPN, even if they do lay off 700 people, which would be over 10% of their entire global workforce, they're still going to be hiring in come January. Like this actually could wind up being as good of an opportunity to get into the industry as there's been in several years for people in their early 20s.
We're talking to Ryan Glasspiegel. Broke a story about ESPN planning to fire hundreds of people as a part of a cost-cutting move. Where does this leave the cable industry in general, right? Because it seems to me that we're in this kind of really fascinating window where broadcast networks were for a long time ridiculed. But everybody still has, theoretically, pretty easy access to ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox. And the audiences reflect that broadcast can still produce audiences. But a lot of people are abandoning cable, right? And so streaming is not yet there. And so one of the challenges that ESPN had was with ESPN Plus, they were basically trying to step off of the cable gravy train, which had been one of the great businesses of all time for media companies to be involved in, over to streaming and be able to do that without creating, you know, sort of a major disaster. And the analogy I made, you know, is that like you're on a sinking ship and there's another ship pulling up beside you and you hope you're just going to step from one ship to another. Are they going to be able to pull it off?
I think they are. I mean, because look, they're backed by Disney, and Disney, as I wrote about in the story, is facing considerable challenges in many of their business lines. Like, that's another subtext of this ESPN story, is that maybe if, like, Disney movies and Disney theme parks and Disney cruises were doing all right, that they might be able to absorb some of the losses ESPN has had in the pandemic. And by the way, like, ESPN hasn't been crushed nearly as bad as some of Disney's other businesses, because, like, they got most of their live sports back. They lost some college football. They lost the Little League World Series. They did lose MLB, but then they got extra playoffs that didn't exist. And so they didn't lose all that much of the live sports that they had planned that they were going to have all the way back in March. But to your question about the cable, so ESPN, this is not exact math, but if we use round numbers, it's a lot easier. They had about 100 million cable subscribers in 2015, maybe a little bit more. Now they have about 80 million, give or take a couple million. So they lost 20 million subscribers, about 20% of their customer base. And yeah, this is true for every cable network. It's true for TNT. It's true for FS1. It's true for even Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, whose viewership is rising during these, like, chaotic times. But the reason that it affects ESPN more than anybody else is that ESPN subscriber fees are gigantic. I mean, between ESPN, ESPN2, and then you add up their other kind of ancillary networks like ESPN News, ESPNU, et cetera, they're getting probably a little bit over $10 a month per cable subscriber at this point. So you add up 20 million subscribers times $10 million a month, times $10 a month, that's $200 million a month of revenue that they're not having that they would have had 5 years ago. You multiply that by 12, and you're at $2.5 billion. And so the question for ESPN...
That's every year, too, but that's every year, too, by the way. You know, so you think about it, for people out there who are listening, and you're like, oh, you know, well, that's $1 billion here and there. Sooner or later, you start talking about real money, is the famous line. But when you think about losing $2.5 billion a year forever, right, and that money not necessarily coming back... You know, over 10 years, it's $25 billion. I mean, we're talking about monster numbers, and that's where they're looking down the line. And oh, by the way, the numbers are continuing to decline, right? So this cable gravy train, as I talked about it, we don't know where the floor is. Like, where are the people? Like, I'll give you an example. I'm going to always have cable. And I've talked about this on the show before. And by the way, we're talking with Ryan Glasspiegel. He's a writer at OutKick who broke the news about ESPN firing hundreds of employees. I'm always going to have cable, I really think, for, like, basically the rest of my life, because I've got kids in my household, my wife, we all watch different shows, and we also then simultaneously subscribe to Disney Plus, we subscribe to the WWE Network, Amazon Prime, we have Netflix, we have Hulu. Basically, if you can pay for content, my household pays for it, right? And I'd imagine for the foreseeable future, we're going to have that. And I just personally, I don't want to have streaming internet watching games, because those streaming games are substantially behind the cable feed, right? People don't realize that.
They're behind
that.
And they freeze. And
yeah,
like, if you're
it's
on a
frustrating.
Text thread or Twitter, like,
yes.
It gets spoiled for you.
Your buddies are like, oh, that. There's a touchdown. Oh, my God. Like, I was, you know, talking with Whitlock the other night, and we were, you know, talking live during the I guess it was the Sunday night football game, or maybe one of the – it was one of the Monday night games. I think the Packers game. And the Packers scored a touchdown, and I was a minute ahead of him because he has a streaming service at his house. If you're not on social media, if you're not texting with your buddies, and you're just watching the game, it's not that noticeable, but you're a solid minute behind on streaming very often.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't work in this industry and you can save 40 or 50 bucks a month, and that adds up to $600 a year getting YouTube TV instead of Comcast or Spectrum or whatever, then, like, I think you can justify it in many cases, but you can't, I think, if you're you or I. That That being said, those people like Whitlock is still an ESPN subscriber through those services. So that's not even necessarily what we're talking about with the with their sub losses. But yeah, to your point, if they knew what the floor was going to be, like let's say 65 million people are like you and me and are just never going to get rid of cable, then they can start to evaluate, okay, what games do we put on ESPN? What games do we put on ABC? What games do we put on ESPN Plus? And to a certain extent, they're already making that. Like with UFC, they're carving it between ESPN and ESPN Plus. And also, they just kind of like, I don't think anybody would have predicted this even as recently as 3 years ago. They've turned ESPN Plus into a pay-per-view service for the big UFC events. So you have to give them $5 a month all year just to subscribe to ESPN Plus. And then if there's like a Conor McGregor fight or something like that, I mean, I know he doesn't fight all that often, but there are some big fights every couple months, and then you're giving them another $60 or $70. And so I think that ESPN and Disney are going to be a big player in live sports for the foreseeable future. They're adding SEC. They're talking about adding more NFL to their umbrella. The question is how much effort and resources are they going to pour into the things that are adjacent to live sports in their business? I mean, we grew up on SportsCenter, PTI, things like that. Are they going to make new franchises like that, or are they just going to focus on delivering the games? And that's a question we don't really know the answer to.
Yeah, we're talking to Ryan Glassbiegel, who broke the news about ESPN firing hundreds of employees sooner rather than later. And by the way, it could be as soon, based on some conversations, as when the NBA Finals end. And the NBA Finals could end tonight with LeBron favored to win another title with the first title with the Lakers, another title for him, his fourth. What do you think the NBA does going forward? We know that the audience for the NBA Finals this year has been the lowest pretty much in recorded history, modern history, however you want to classify it. The NBA Finals for most of our lives has never had fewer viewers. What happens going forward? That obviously is a hit to ESPN's bottom line because they justify the money that they spend on the NBA based on the finals being able to produce a massive audience. That didn't happen this year. Adam Silver has come out and said, hey, we're going to take social justice slogans off jerseys. We're going to take it off the basketball court, it seems. How much of an issue does the NBA have with their brand going forward?
Yeah, so it's the same question, Clay, of what is the floor? And I would actually predict that this year is at least the temporary floor for the NBA for a variety of reasons. So I don't know that we can necessarily figure out the exact proportion of fans who aren't watching that aren't watching because it's in this super crowded sports environment where the NBA Finals are never going against big NFL Sunday night football games or big SEC games and on down the line with all the other sports happening right now. And then how much of it is because people don't want social justice messaging mixed in with their games? And Adam Silver said, look, I'm sensitive to people who are even on our side and agree with the messages that we're conveying that they just want to watch a basketball game and they don't want this embedded in the product. I mean, that's not just you saying that as a radio host. That's the NBA commissioner acknowledging that a portion of the audience doesn't want the product in the way that it's been served in this year. But I still think that between going back to a somewhat regular schedule, now the season's going to start late, but at least it's not going to end competing against football unless there's another big play stoppage next year. And they're getting Kevin Durant back in the New York market, and the Warriors should be healthy again. So you add those factors in, and you would think that at least for now, what we're seeing is the floor.
It is interesting, and by the way, it's worth mentioning, the NBA has managed to mostly avoid competition with the NFL. If they finish this in five games, I believe I'm correct in this. Dub, you can verify, Ryan, you may remember off the top of your head. I believe they started the NBA Finals on a Tuesday. Game two was on a Friday. Game three did compete with the NFL on Sunday night. So you had Tuesday, Friday, Sunday, Tuesday, Friday. So they've managed to avoid, by and large, substantial competition with the NFL and with college football, for that matter. But they still have had a really, really small audience. Ryan, keep up the good work. Appreciate the time on the show. And for people who want to read his article, Ryan Glasspiegel's article about ESPN and the hundreds of employees that they are laying off, you can go to outkick.com and check it out. Appreciate it, my man.
Thanks, Clay. Have a good one.
You too.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We've been talking a lot about the divorce between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. And I would say the number one story surrounding the divorce between Brady and Belichick has been, how are both guys going to do? And right now, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coming into this game that they played last night against the Bears, I think most of you would have had to say that Brady was winning the divorce. And what I mean by that is Brady sitting at 3-1, favored to beat the Bears and get to 4-1, be in first place in the NFC South. Meanwhile, Belichick's dealing with the Stephon Gilmore positive. He's dealing with Cam Newton's positive. He's got Brian Hoyer that he's going to have to start again. They've had to move around the schedule. It's been a real challenge. And last night, to me, what it represented was the degree to which Brady may have been able to take for granted the overall team discipline that existed with the New England Patriots compared to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Brady and the Patriots very rarely ever lost a football game because of their failures, their incompetence, their penalties, their mental errors. All night long, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were the better football team. They ran it better. They moved the ball more effectively. They had more yards. They were more in control of the down and distance. But they still found a way to lose this football game. And a big reason why was the lack of discipline and penalties that they had. 11 penalties for 109 yards. Brady took a lot of hits in this game, and it wasn't necessarily hits on, they couldn't really block Khalil Mack, but it was failure to even get a hand on the rushing defender a decent amount of the time. It was alignment errors. It was personified by the way the game ended with Brady not really sure what down it was. Nobody in the huddle on fourth down was saying, okay, guys, we got to get the first down here before we worry about the field goal. In order to get more plays and have a chance to win this game, we got to get 6 yards. Because one of the interesting things is Brady was standing there saying, it's fourth down now. But there were other players on the offense with him saying the same thing. And you even heard Joe Buck and Troy Aikman pause there for a moment, because when somebody is super wrong, sometimes that can make other people uncomfortable about calling out the fact that they are super wrong. In both of their losses so far, against the Saints and against the Bears now, the Bucs have had over 100 yards in penalties. It has stacked up that they put themselves behind the down and distance chains time after time after time. And Brady's just not able to save them. But when you watch this game, one of the things that stands out to me is the Bucs, by and large, could run the football game, football, and the Bears could not. Look at the team stats and ask yourself, what in the world happened here? First of all, the Bucs had over 100 more yards than the Bears did, just about. A little bit shy of 100, 96 more yards. They averaged substantially more yards per play. Let's toss the passing statistics out of the method of analysis here right now and just point out to you that the Bucs averaged over 5 yards a rush, but they only ran it 20 times for 106 yards. They threw the ball 41 times. Now, that might make sense for the Bears, because the Bears ran the ball 14 times and they only got 35 yards. But why in the world did the Bucs not run the football more than they did when they, again, were averaging over 5 yards a carry? Ronald Jones was making some plays. I know they had the one big run, but Ronald Jones only carried the ball 17 times. He averaged over 6 yards a run. It seemed like they had a lot of rhythm going in the running game, and it's not as if the Bucs got behind early and had to make a decision to move the ball through the air to try to keep up. They were in control for much of this game, the Bucs were, of the overall vibe of the game in general. It felt like this was their game to win and then their game to put away, and they just weren't ever able to do it. They were only 4 of 14 on third down. I mean, here's an early move that I thought from Bruce Arians was trying to send a message. They went for it from their own 20-yard line. That was a disrespectful decision by Bruce Arians that was basically letting everybody know, hey, I don't have any fear of this Chicago Bear offense. We're going to go for it on fourth and short from our own 20-yard line. And they got it, by the way. And they came out and took early control of this game and got up 13-0, then fell apart at the end of the half, and then fell apart late in the game. And I wonder, for Tom Brady, last night when he eventually got home and he put his head down on the pillow and he started to go to sleep, did he think for at least a minute this would have never happened in New England? Belichick took care of the overall team discipline and created a culture that would not countenance this kind of error. I never saw Tom Brady lose count on what down it was in New England. He's only played 5 games in Tampa Bay, and it's already happened. We'll talk about this game more, break down much more as well. Chris Mannix is also scheduled to join us to talk about Game 5 of the NBA Finals. All that still to come, plus the gambling picks to get you ready for the weekend in the NFL. That's the final hour of the program. This is OutKick.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.